once more under the breach, dear friend.
Now let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if today is September 30th of the year of our Lord 2117. People don't normally say it that way. They normally say 2117. Mm-hmm. Then you can give us a call in here at 254-773-1400 and make a comment, offer a question about anything to do with the economy or investments or things of that ilk. And we will attempt to answer them as truthfully and factually as we can.
Sounds great. I wanted to hit something. They've talked about it a lot in politics, but I'm going to use actual numbers for the reality of economics. And that is, people talk about outsourcing jobs. It was a big portion of the election. Both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump talked about it as a major problem, and that both of them wanted the greatest jobs revolution of the century, of all of our time. Different great words for political speech, meaning we need more jobs here. Well, as we've said over the past year and more, we're very close to full employment. There aren't a whole lot of people wandering around looking for jobs still. They still exist, but it's a lot rarer than it used to be. And in China, people work at 1/6. We got a caller coming in. I'll come back to that in just a minute. Okay. Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Somebody just wanted to feed us
dial. Just the dial tone. So yes, the Chinese. Well, this is specifically about one company, Kangol Hats, which is a big hat brand. I've never worn a Kangol hat. Have you?
Not to the best of my knowledge, but I don't carefully examine hats to see if they're made by Kangol.
They're very hip hats. It would probably not include us.
No, I'm a geek.
U.S. worker average pay there in the manufacturing facility is about $15.50. So
per day?
Per hour.
So wow.
U.S.
That ain't bad.
U.S. workers, $15.50 an hour. That's better than minimum wage. The problem is that they are about twice as slow as a Chinese worker doing the same thing, and they take a lot longer to train in that position. A lot of times the Chinese worker that is being trained to do it has done some kind of dexterous thing with their hand repeatedly their whole life and can't read, where a United States person has generally a high school education and have been working at doing computer skills and other things like that. So working closely with sewing machines and being trained from scratch on it, it takes longer to train an American to do it. So that being said, in China, they're paid about $2.50 an hour, which is twice what they were paid 10 years ago, just as a side note. Americans paid six times as much. But the price of the hat when manufactured in the United States versus manufactured in China is only about 28% more in the United States. Six times more as far as the hourly rate wages, but then you have shipping costs and you have all that stuff. So we're very close to being competitive with a Chinese worker at a very low skill set that we would normally consider for like a service job. That's a very low-level skill. It's a very high-level nimbleness skill. And I'm bringing that up because with robotics and with the ability for one worker to control a series of robots, we should expect the pay in those facilities for Americans to go up drastically, but to use less workers. And I'm using Kangol specifically because they're looking ahead and seeing that, and they've established a plant here in the United States that is currently paying $15.50 an hour to Americans to do this job. But it's more expensive and it takes longer than having it done in China. So why'd they spend the money to do it? Because they're looking ahead at it's cheaper to do it here if you're using robots, and the robots are almost at a level where they're cheap enough to easily have a lower cost for an American-made product than a Chinese-made product. So all the talk about bringing the jobs back will begin to do that when it's profitable.
There's a study that came out this week. Let's see if I can quote who it came from. Anyway, it was published in the Wall Street Journal. But there was a study that came out this week, by Scott Winship at George Mason University, which is, by the way, not by any stretch of the imagination a liberal organization.
No.
Trying to explain why the unemployment rate is low while the U6, which was made a big deal of during the presidential campaign, is high. It's like 7.8%. And the answer is that...
Wait, let me say what U6 is. That's people that used to be employed,
but aren't employed,
or are of the right age to be employed, but are not looking for work.
Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the what they call inactive unemployed.
That would be retirees.
No. I'm talking about within the prime.
Oh, within the prime working age.
Within the prime working
U6 week. In the prime working age.
U6 is on the prime working age. So you've got the prime working age people. And you've got a...
Well, it goes up to age 67. So there are a lot of people that aren't working.
Well, no, no. The numbers I just looked at are 25 to 65.
Okay. All right.
And what happens is that we do have 11.25% of the men. Now, these are males. And amazingly enough, almost universally white males. Between the age of 25 and 65... who constitute 11.25% of the workforce who are called inactive, meaning they are not looking, they're not actively looking for work. Now, a significant portion of them, about a quarter of them, said if somebody offered them a job and it was the right job, they might take it.
Yeah, I know some people like that.
But here's the point.
But they're not actively looking and they really don't care to look.
And this is the point. The study that came out from George Mason University said almost 60% of those, 58%, are disabled. They define themselves as disabled.
Yep. That's true for the guys that I'm talking about too.
And because they're disabled, they receive some minimum disability or they receive help from family.
Or some kind of pension.
Or something. And that is the highest number we've ever seen. Now, the obvious thing that pops up, well, if we weren't paying them so much to be disabled, they'd go to work. Well, in fact, that's not true because not paying them very much. If you look at what SSI will pay somebody who's on disability, it ain't much. It's a minimal, very minimal amount. And what we've got is...
There's another piece to throw into the statistics, and this is an important piece because it's not just SSI. This group includes disabled veterans.
Right. And there's just... But the big point is apparently... The vast majority, if not all, of these disabled, mostly Caucasian, working-age men, not women, mind you, are in fact disabled.
You also have people that have retired early from Social Security at age 62.
Well, that's...
That goes up to 65.
There's a few of those. It's a very, very tiny slice. There's a significant number of people who are house husbands. Their wives are working. They're staying home taking care of their family.
Right.
There's a significant number of people in school. There's this little small slice called other, but there's this huge chunk, 60%, who are disabled. And in some cases, they're not receiving benefits. They just simply say, I can't work because I'm disabled.
Right.
And this is something that when we look at the unemployment rates – particularly during the campaign, the president, as he was running for office, was saying that these are fake numbers because there's really like a much higher unemployment rate. Well, in fact, somebody has taken, since that claim was made, has taken a very, very serious look at the issue and determined that the people who are unemployed and not looking for work, very, very, very few of them are saying, I would go to work, except the jobs that are being offered are inadequate for me, and I can't make a living on those jobs. All the things that we thought might be there, if we would produce good paying jobs, then we would have this surge of people who came out of the woodwork who had not been employed before that we could employ now, and it would cause the economy to jump forward. But there's a couple of big issues. Many of these disabled people are addicted to pain relief medication prescribed by a physician.
Right.
And as a result, particularly in the lower education requirement jobs, the jobs that are available almost inevitably involve operating something.
Right. And you can't do that.
And they have the drug testing and they can't pass the drug testing. That's not that they're using illegal drugs.
But they're not allowed to operate heavy machinery. It says it right on the bottle.
Yeah. And as a result, so this is where this higher unemployment and, by the way, slower economy, a piece of it is coming from.
And in the middle of this, I want to throw this in there so you don't think we're Trump bashing here. This is important. Trump in his campaign said that the numbers weren't accurate, that there were a larger number that were unemployed. And often the U6 number that we just talked about is the one that's pointed to. Now that he is president, he's not referring to the U6 numbers now.
Because
when you're in office, it's a lot better to look at the low unemployment. When you're working to get in office, you want to emphasize the high unemployment. And when I say we're not Trump bashing, Obama did it too when he was running for office against Hillary Clinton and against John McCain. He came out and said unemployment numbers are a lot higher than they look. And then as soon as he got into office, he started quoting the lowest number. George Bush did it. Bill Clinton did it. So we're not Trump bashing here. It's just a statement of anytime someone's trying to be elected, they refer to the rarer used numbers that have extra knowledge needed to understand. And then as soon as they get into office, they want to give themselves kudos and talk about the unemployment being lower. So it's not Trump. It's just the office of the president makes you quote different numbers when you're running for it than when you're in it.
To change the subject a little bit, we've got a couple of world records that were broken for the United States. I say world records.
Were they made of vinyl?
They were
not vinyl records?
They were historical records for the United States.
Oh, okay. All right. Because you don't want to break a vinyl record.
The net worth of the median American family and the average American family and all the rest of them is the highest it has ever been in history. And we've had several quarters in a row now where it has remained the highest. And
that's fantastic.
I say highest. Now let me rephrase that a little bit. Actually, it was higher for a brief period of time in the year 2000, but that high net worth was a result of a stock market bubble. We don't have a stock market bubble going on. We don't have a real estate housing bubble going on.
And we do, by the way, have tapes from the year 1999 and 2000 talking about we were in a stock market bubble.
Yeah.
Before it burst.
And so we economically, the median or average American household in the United States, and generally speaking, we see that is true, is the best we've ever seen. Another thing that happened, and this was last week, it didn't make world news. It was just a little tidbit way in the back of an article that I read, and I double-checked on it with the Petroleum Institute. Last week, ending Thursday. Now, they end the weeks on Thursday in the oil stuff so they can get it out on the weekends.
Well, it's just for the fun of it. They've just decided.
So they announced on Friday that the end of the week, Thursday.
It's the same reason why the government ends its year in October.
We had the highest oil export volume during that week in the history of the United States.
Wow.
And meanwhile,
and this is while recovering from some major oil-type disasters.
The refineries are back online after Harvey, which again is a major thing because it used to take months to get the refineries around Houston and on the Gulf Coast back online. The other thing is
Katrina was a good training.
When we had a hurricane go through the Gulf, oil production,
everything down.
U.S. oil production would be down for months.
Well, that's not the major source of oil production anymore.
We're now back to near record oil production in the United States. Everything seems to be coming back online very nicely.
There's a reason for that.
And our oil supply in the United States continues to rise in reaching capacity. As a result, West Texas Intermediate crude is less expensive than Brent oil, which means that's why the big exports went up, is we're able to sell cheap oil at a lower price than the Europeans can.
Yeah. This is important. You know, we hit this big record and people go, how do you have a record if things were all turned off? Did it just get turned on again at like full on 11 or something? No, here's what's going on. In the past, a hurricane going through the Gulf, everybody would evacuate the platforms out there. And that was where a lot of our oil was coming from. Still a lot of oil coming out there. Now the majority of our oil is coming from fracking. And it doesn't have to be in the Gulf. In fact, there is no fracking in the Gulf. That'll come later. What we have now is big parts of Texas and in Dakotas and parts of Louisiana, we have oil being pulled up that's not weather sensitive. And if you look at the orders for oil holding containers, you'll see that we had this massive spike of orders right during Harvey because they didn't want to turn off their fracking well. But you can't ship it to Houston anymore. So they had to find...
It goes to Cushing.
Right. They had to find buckets and wheelbarrows and trucks.
Well, tanks. Yeah.
Yes, well, the buckets and wheelbarrows, that's slightly facetious. But they were filling up every available and some unavailable containers.
You have a facetious wheelbarrow?
I do. A facetious wheelbarrow. That's the best kind to have.
Is it a hypothetical?
That's why facetious. It only has one wheel.
Is it a hypothetical, metaphorical, facetious wheelbarrow?
It thinks it's a unicycle. So while this is going on, basically every bucket container that's available at all is filled up before they did, for a very short period of time, turn off the oil production because they had no extra place to put it. And the prices of oil trailers for tractor trailers, this is one of those crazy things, spiked right in the middle of Harvey. Not because people want to transport a bunch of oil around in a tractor trailer, but because they needed to put it somewhere while they were waiting to send it down to be refined.
Okay, let's...
So when the refineries come back online, all this oil is pumped back to them as quick as can be, and we hit record numbers.
Let me go back to the household net worth and income story. I think it's pretty fascinating. From 2010 to 2013... was recovery time, and one would expect both net worth and household incomes to rise. In fact, from 2010 to 2013, median household income fell 2.2% a year. The wealth of the average family during 2010 to 2013, during the recovery, dropped 16%. But this is what's really fascinating, because these recovery numbers are these numbers are not done every year. From the median household income from 2014 to the present rose 10%. 2013 to 2016, the median household income it rose 10%. And the median net worth rose like 25% during that period. Whereas from 2010 to 2013, income fell 5%, while median wealth fell 2%. Something has happened. It apparently began around 2013 and continues into the present. And it's kind of hiding beneath the surface. It's kind of like the rest of the economy. All this discussion about the fact that we're having very low inflation, we're having a slow recovery, GDP is low, and bemoan. But meanwhile, the net worth of the average household is growing very nicely. The income of the average household is growing very nicely. The median income, by the way, for a household in the United States now, which means half or above, half or below, is around $52,000. So if you're making above $52,700, you're in the upper half, which is, I guess, cool. At the same time, and this is, you may or may not like it, roughly 39% of all the net worth in the United States is held by 1% of the people, which means, and that keeps rising. It is going up like mad. It continues to rise, that both the income and the net worth of the top 1%. Now, admittedly, the top 1% are not the same people each year.
No.
Jake has discussed that.
In fact, the top 1%, there's only about 7 to 10% of those that are there 3 years in a row.
Yeah, and if you really want it to boil down to, if you were advising a young person today, how can you go out there and increase your probability of having a really, really good net worth and a really, really good income?
I tell them quickly, what you need to do is you need to be in the top 1%, and that's the best advice.
Yeah, well, that could be, but I don't want to be there. So the issue is, first, you need to be white, not Hispanic.
Well, and secondly, is this statistically?
This is statistically. And secondly, and this is much bigger than white, non-Hispanic, okay? Get yourself a college degree. You have a college degree, you have, over your lifetime, like three times the income of another person who looks like you and acts like you and maybe had the same parents or whatever who didn't get a college degree. Now, what there is magical about a college degree, I think, is questionable. Obviously, there's debt associated with college degrees, and people are upset about that, and I can understand that too. But, and maybe it's just that the people who are going to get wealthy choose to take 4 years to go to college. I don't know.
I think that there are a lot of people that get wealthy without going to college. But on the whole, getting wealthy, going to college go hand in hand. And that's one of those, I tell this to people, the purest form of investment is education. Mm-hmm. There is no other education, there's no other investment that I know of. That if over a four-year period, and I'm going to go kind of at a high realm here, over a four-year period, you put in $100,000, so $25,000 a year for 4 years.
Right.
At the end of it, because of that, you get a paycheck for a year for $66,000, and that's low end. If you've spent $100,000 on your education, you're probably mm-hmm. going to make more than $66,000 going in. But then you have the rest of your life. Now, what is the pay for someone without a college education at the same level? So $30,000. So we'll just say $36,000 is the amount of money that you earn above somebody that didn't spend the $100,000. That's a 36% return per year if your pay never goes up.
Now, I think it's important to note that in the forest of numbers and the averages, it sort of helps if you get a college degree that has something to do with getting a job.
That you're right. That might help.
Although
I
merely
like,
having the college degree.
I have a master's degree in navel gazing. I gaze at my navel regularly.
Well, I don't know. You could probably get a job in the Navy.
Yeah, I would just get out on the coast and you could navel gaze all day long.
Yeah, that would be cool. But you know, and it's one of those things that our economy is doing very well. It has done very well, apparently, for some time now. It continues to do very well. A caller last hour mentioned that the European Union is finally, all the nations in the European Union actually have their economy growing right now. Right. But in the European Union, the European Central Bank is still buying bonds and stimulating the economy,
right.
and inflation is
what happens
about
when,
zero.
What happens when they start copying what the Fed's doing? When they stop buying bonds and they start raising rates, the answer to that is they won't be growing as fast.
We won't know until we see it happen.
Right. They won't grow as fast, but it won't happen immediately. And you know, what's going on right now, if we've got a 12-month return in the S&P 500, you said this at the beginning of the first hour, a 16% return
mm-hmm.
for over a 12-month period.
Yeah. It helps that it was down a year ago
right.
at this point.
Two quarters in a row of 3% plus GDP. Those are symptoms of an economy going very strongly. And there is a danger of people jumping onto that and saying, this is going to go on forever. I don't hear it yet. But the Federal Reserve is kind of getting ahead of it and saying, hey, we're raising interest rates. We're going to start selling our bonds. When it does that, it's going to cool the economy a little bit. If we get a big tax drop right in the middle of it, the Fed's going to have to dump a bunch of bonds on the market and raise interest rates drastically, or we'll have inflation, a lot of it. Not that tax going down is bad, because the overall impact for the short term will be very good. It's the long-term impact that we're more concerned about, inflation and the deficit.
First quarter was only 1.2. Second quarter was 3.1.
Oh, okay. All right.
They just revised the second quarter
up.
I hear somebody talking.
It's not me. I think it's you.
Oh, it must be me. Okay.
Yes. Your computer is talking to you.
Yes, my computer started.
Sounds very interesting. You should just put it on the microphone. We'll hear what it says.
Well, it was somebody, you know.
Was it an advertisement?
It was an advertisement that just suddenly popped. I don't like that, by the way, when that happens.
Yes. We go to very upscale economic sites, and sometimes they still pop up with this stuff. It's just not very
You are nice. Listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone numbers to call in here, telephone number to call in here is 254-773-1400.
I want to hit.
If today is September 30th.
Yes. I want to hit one more thing before we go to break, and that is I want to talk about the Equifax hack one more time.
Hey, I was going to talk about that, another aspect of it.
Okay, go ahead then. You've got another aspect. Go ahead.
You know, and Jake is undoubtedly going to talk to you about things you can do to protect your identity. A couple things about the Equifax leak. First, there have been to date, no reported incidents of people using that data. What there have been numerous reports of is people contacting folks saying, your data has been leaked at Equifax. You need to give us certain information so we can fix it. People giving them all of the information that was leaked at Equifax and then them using it against them.
Right.
But there's at least in Nebraska, and if it's happening in Nebraska, I suspect it's happening elsewhere. They are seeing a sudden spike in identity theft to loot annuities.
Yeah.
And that meaning that it's not something people think about. They think about their credit line. Basically, you have an annuity at an annuity company, and somebody is calling up and directing the money to come to a different address, to a different person. They're not regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission like we are. And as a result, each state has its own set of regulation, and they're not uniformly or very well enforced as to use of identity when contacting an insurance company to get money. So that's something that you might want to keep an eye on right now.
Keep an eye on it. And in the middle of it, you should know that that's not purely Equifax related.
It has nothing to do with Equifax.
Because Equifax didn't have account numbers for any of your assets. They only have it for your debts. They have credit card information and mortgage information and car loan information. They don't have investment information or bank account information. And that's something I've gotten a lot of questions about it this week. People saying, what should I do with my accounts? How do I protect myself? I like to tell them we have a very new cutting edge method of technology on
cutting edge or bleeding edge?
Bleeding edge, even. Okay. We are way out there ahead of even the biggest of the banks as far as this goes, way out there ahead of it. For security, you know, a lot of them have second line communication.
Dual factor validation.
Right, where they text you and then you've got to put in a code. We're ahead of that. And that is that when one of our clients emails or requests a withdrawal, we call them and talk to them, and we actually know them.
It's called vocal recognition.
Right, and it's a new form of technology. It's called knowing people.
It's called bio-vocal recognition.
Bio-vocal recognition.
Right.
It is the highest cutting-edge technology out there, and we highly recommend that every company pick it up. That will bring a lot of jobs back to the United States.
Oh, yes. Well, in fact, there's a couple of companies I was talking to one of our clients who has identity lock in place, and he has all kinds of things in place to keep, and he's shifting his bank account around because it was at Equifax, and he's doing lots of things. But he mentioned that at least two of the banks that he works with now, when there is a new line of credit or a large transaction that's not completely normal, he gets a telephone call from a human being.
Telling you, it's our technology. We should have patented it.
We should have, right.
Vocal bio recognition. It's a new thing. We should have gotten that patent out. We could get paid every time anybody gives a call. Now,
frankly,
I just wanted to say we've touched on this. I want to say that you should, if you're listening to this and you have any form of credit whatsoever or have ever had any form of credit, you should log in to the websites of each of the three credit bureaus and put a lock or a freeze on your credit.
You actually apparently have to call.
Well, you have to call now because the website's been breaking. So many people have been trying to do it.
And when you call, according to several people I've talked to, and I've heard this in news as well, you just get put on hold for a long time.
To happen over the next several months.
In the short term, given the number of millions of people who had the data taken out, the chances of you getting hit with an identity theft because of the Equifax hack is about the same as you're getting killed by a meteor falling from the sky.
Unless a hacker comes up with a way of mass creating credit accounts.
Yeah, but
that's more sophisticated.
That hadn't happened, and it's not, I don't think it's likely. And one of the reasons behind this, and I've read several articles on this issue, there's so much attention being paid to the Equifax hack right now. And Equifax is devoting so much time and energy and money to spotting hacks or identity thefts that are resulting from the Equifax hack. Anybody who sells the data, whoever has that data, whatever hacker got it, and attempts to sell it and somebody starts to use it, will have the full force and faith and everything of the United States government and everybody and their cousin coming down on their head so fast. And because of the fact that it is so high level of attention at this point, there's no question that the State Department and everybody else will go after wherever that person is overseas as well, very quickly.
This is the thing. You touched on it. I want to reiterate it. I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't have a TV in my house. But every restaurant I've been in for the past few weeks, I'm sitting there, whether it's sports or some kind of Hallmark movie going on. One of the commercials, it's always going to be one of the longest commercials, is about spending somewhere between $10 and $20 a month to have your credit watched or monitored for you.
Right. LifeLock.
LifeLock of some kind. And I'm not going to call them out specifically. You did that. But there are a lot of them out there.
That's the most popular one.
Those services are now being offered for free for life from both Experian and Equifax. So anytime a big event like this happens, there are people that jump into it to profit. And that's not a bad thing. And if they do a good job for you and you feel like they're earning it, that's great. But one of the big problems is in a lot of these companies that do credit monitoring, it's almost impossible to turn it off. You're going to be billed forever unless you jump through the little needle hole and do it in triplicate.
And I actually read the ad in detail that I got sent in my email from LifeLock. That's why I said that.
Right.
They claim 96%, they stop 96% of the attempts or remedy them. Well, wait a minute. That's 4% they don't stop. Let's presume they're fudging the figures just a little bit.
All right.
That means one in every 20 people who signs up for LifeLock who has an attempted credit hack
still has the
credit hack.
Right. So there is no perfect solution here. Freezing your credit and getting a credit monitoring service are kind of everybody should do that. But there is no perfect solution. Hopefully there will be one at some point, but it's kind of doubtful. Banks have been robbed since banks existed.
I can't remember the name of the guy who movie was made and the book was written about, Catch Me If You Can, who went to prison and who's now the premier.
Oh, I know who it was about. It was Leonardo DiCaprio. It was about his life.
That was the actor.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, was it Matt Damon? No.
Anyway, he had an article where he was interviewed. I think it was in the Journal. And he said he wouldn't worry about the Equifax hack too much because it's got such publicity. He said, actually, the biggest danger, in his opinion, of a major hack of your system is when you give away voluntarily all the data that's necessary to hack your identity.
Right.
He said, for example, when you write a check at the grocery store and they require your driver's license number, your social security number, they've got your routing number, and you hand it to a clerk who sticks it in a drawer.
Generally a minimum wage clerk.
You have given away all of the data necessary to completely steal your identity.
All they have to do is have a cell phone in their hand when they're putting it in the drawer, and snap goes the picture. They've got routing number. They've got bank account number. They've got name.
They got everything.
And address.
He said the second issue is every time you use a credit card, whether you hand it to somebody at a restaurant and they walk off with it,
they could do anything with that,
or you buy something online and you give them your credit card number, your expiration date, and then the number on the back of the card, you put yourself in a position where you've given somebody the ability to do, and matter of fact, that's happened to us on several occasions.
Part of the reason why I like to go to big name places to do the, like Amazon Target. But Target is the next thing I was going to say. Mm-hmm. The reality is, and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago while you were gone, we really are in the same state we were, the same method and thought as we were when the Model T first came out.
I wasn't in Texas at that time.
The state of mind.
Okay.
And you weren't alive yet. So a Model T doesn't have a key. There's no key ignition. There's no lock on the door. There's only one door. There's a painted-on door on the other side. Quite often, there were no windows except the one in front. The only thing keeping people from stealing your Model T was the fact that if you owned a Model T, it was likely you were the only person in town that knew how to drive it. And that's where we are with our identity and with our computers. You need to have an antivirus piece of software on your computer.
Not
Kaspersky. They work with the Russian government. So get antivirus. I think Microsoft is a good version. There's a lot of them out there. Get it. If you don't have it, then you are, in essence, parking your car with a $100 bill on the windshield and leaving it unlocked.
I will make a conditional endorsement here. I did a lot of research on viral internet protection.
Are you a virologist?
Every one of the independent sources that rated them said Bitdefender was number one.
That's a good one, but it definitely takes up a lot of resources on your
computer.
Takes
up resources.
Slows you down.
But it
will prevent a lot of things from happening.
They ran tests with all the others, and they would catch about, again, that 80% of the attempts to break into your computer or put a worm in it or put a mm-hmm. virus in it or steal stuff from you via the computer. The Bitdefender caught about 99.999% of, including stuff that hadn't even been published yet.
There are some other good news pieces out there in that most computers now come default encrypted so that it's not available unless you have the right password. That used to not be the case. Now people are worried about losing their passwords. Before, it didn't matter. They could just take your hard drive and take everything off of it as if they had your password, even without it. So the default for Microsoft, default for Apple now, is encrypted. That's good. We're moving in the right direction. And it takes an Equifax hack or a Target hack, enough hacks so that public awareness is there that we need some form of security for us to do it. And like I said, again, I said this a couple of weeks ago, This is, we're still in the days of the equivalent of the Pinkerton investigation detective agency, in that if the vast majority of hack attacks come from places like Indonesia, Malaysia, Nigeria, Ukraine, Russia, the FBI can't go there. What's going there, the banks have to hire private people. And quite often, those private people, kind of like bounty hunters, will fly to those countries and kidnap the person and fly to a country that has extradition.
I read an interesting article about one of the ways that Russia, despite all the sanctions against them and everything running against them anyways, managed to stay afloat economically.
They've got a lot of money coming in from illicit hacking.
That's right. And basically, if you want to illicitly hack the United States, the Russian government will, under the table, say, fine, that's just okay, but you give us a chunk of the money.
And they may even give you a job at Kaspersky Labs.
Yeah, and so, again, the threat is out there. It's big. It's real. I wouldn't be too terribly concerned about it. Among other things, we strongly recommend that you set up a credit lock situation where you go to the three big credit reporting agencies, and you set up a credit freeze with a PIN number. So that means, by the way, if you want to apply for a new credit card, you're going to have to give the credit card company your PIN number, which in and of itself,
the PIN number is like ATM machine.
I know.
The N means
you should just
call it a PIN.
Yeah, but
or an ATM M.
Yeah, but you don't understand what I mean.
Your
basically,
PIN,
you got to
yeah.
give them your PIN. in order to get a new line of credit, but it is an amazingly secure way of keeping somebody from opening up lines of credit in your name if they have your identity information. The other thing is, watch anything that you have with an insurance company.
Anywhere else for that matter,
well,
but
now,
specifically insurance companies.
If you're in the securities realm, there's a law, there's in the SEC and FINRA, which is
SEC got really, hacked too. I
mean. Yeah, they got hacked, but the point is they have some pretty severe standards and penalties for identity theft protection that the broker dealers and investment advisors have to follow. Insurance companies don't have that level of protection. They just don't have it. Basically, if they get a form in the mail with something that looks like your signature on it,
they're going to send the money.
They are either going to send the money or including, it's entirely possible to go to write, to get the form from an insurance company, call up an insurance company, send me your change request form. They send the form, somebody who has a copy of your signature that from any document you've ever signed, can send them an address change request form, and they will change the address based on the signature on the piece of paper. And in many cases, there's certainly no requirement for them to do so. And in many cases, they do not contact you at your old address to say, hey, somebody just said change my address. And then the next thing that the people send for, this is how the annuities were getting ripped off.
Right.
The next thing that happens is immediately after changing the address, they send in they call in for the new request. This says, send me a withdrawal form so I can take money out of my annuity.
To the new address that I just updated with last week. Yeah.
And it doesn't – and it's a big loophole. And it's a big loophole because the state legislatures have not changed the securities laws the way the SEC and FINRA have changed the federal standards.
Right. And the same people that are doing this are at the same time creating a bank account in your name. Generally at an online bank, so they don't even have to show up.
Yep.
They do all of their fraudulent documents there, basically from the Equifax hack or from your check.
Helps tremendously if they have your social security number.
Yeah, if you've got a check and they've got a picture of it, like we were just talking about the grocery store, then they set up a bank account. They have the address on the bank account be the same as the one that they changed the annuity company to, and it may be to somebody completely different. They just check their mail regularly.
Mm-hmm.
They find somebody who doesn't check the mail on a street somewhere, and they have all of their mail sent in your name to that address.
Go through your trash and find a statement from the insurance company.
So all of this means that shred your papers, there's nobody responsible for this but you. And in most cases, you don't wind up losing money. You wind up losing time and peace of mind. And that in some ways is worse. I mean, if you could write a check for the time and the peace of mind, you might. You, we've got to play some commercials.
We do have to do some, well, public service or something.
Some type of vocal something or another from the from KTEM. So we'll be back on the other side. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. I'm Jake. This guy over here
is Jeff.
And the phone number to call in here is 254-773-1400. We'll be back.
And we're back for a whopping 5 minutes or so, or maybe six, with the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we thought we would do a wrap up. The good news is the stock market has, I mean, there's a lot of good news. The stock market has performed amazingly well over the last year, up about, I mean, the S&P 500 is up about 16%. It's up about 4% in the quarter that's ending today, unless you're a business day quarter tracker, in which case, if you're a business day quarter tracker, it ended yesterday at the close of the market. Oil exports are up. The inflation is almost non-existent, which is driving the economists a little bit crazy. The optimism in business is high. It's just an ongoing litany, may not be the right word, but an ongoing litany of good news. And it's really hard to get unhappy about everything, with the possible exception of worrying about our long-term debt levels at the governmental level, which seems to be about to get a lot worse.
Right. And this is, well, it seems to be.
I said seems to be.
But the market doesn't seem to think so.
Well.
Because the market didn't really move when this came out. It looks, and when the tax document came out that said, hey, we were going to do these cuts, we didn't see the market jump. Which means that the market is still thinking of this maybe a little bit like health reform.
Yeah, there's a very reasonable chance that absolutely nothing will come of tax reform because of the fact that there's so many tax cuts in it without offsetting either spending cuts or tax increases someplace else.
It didn't meet the common sense test. That, it doesn't look like we've got the right revenue neutral concept going.
Well, it did not. Even the leaders of the committees, House Ways and Means and everything else,
very clear. Said it's not revenue neutral.
They're not trying to make it revenue neutral. They're trying to increase the deficit dramatically. And the question is, it's got to get through. They can get it through the Senate with 50 votes.
Right.
The question is whether they can get 50 senators to sign off on a huge deficit reduction when we don't have any emergencies going on.
And this is the example I used in the car on the way here.
I mean,
here.
Deficit increase.
If a union is working, all the union workers are working for a big company, and the union negotiates a much higher pay for the union workers when the company's not making any more profit than it did before. In fact, it's going into debt every year. What I would say to any union employee, you better save that money, because that's the ingredients for making the company fail. It might be feel good for a few years. Save that stuff.
If I were in charge somehow magically and could make things happen, I would say, okay, we got about 13 years historically, if history is our guide, we got about 13 years to a major recession, even a depression, left in the economy. This because we do run through these cycles, and we have a huge national debt. Even if we discount the debt outstanding, not the debt held by the public, which is the real one.
Yeah, I could even say 12 years at this point.
Then I would say set up a 10-year program of slightly increased taxes. There's really very little spending decrease left without making some people really unhappy. So basically, I would say raise taxes slightly and work at getting us in the position to pay down the debt over the next decade so that as we go into the next crisis.
Which is going to happen, even if it's not in a decade, or it could be in 2 decades. But if we're not prepared for it, if we've got tons of debt, well, we're in trouble.
And You know, that's just the way I would do it. And again, that wouldn't be very popular.
That's why we're not sitting anywhere. We don't have representative in front of our name, is because we're looking at the reality, and sometimes it's not very nice.
Yeah, responsibly at this point, if we use Keynesian economics or Friedman's economics, it doesn't make any difference. We have a healthy, growing economy. It's time to slightly raise taxes
and pay down the debt
that we ran up during the recession.
Not have more debt in the good times, because that means when bad times come again, it's going to be a lot worse.
That's just my opinion, which is every penny you paid for it.
They're throwing pennies at the radio at the moment, just sort of at the computer. Bang, bang.
And
we're about out of time.
We're about out. And if you wanted to get some personal advice as opposed to education, investment advice from us, or you wanted us to manage your investment portfolio, you're certainly welcome to give us a call during the week or voicemail during the weekend. You can give us a call at 254-947. Now, this is a hard one to remember, 947-1111.
You can also reach that same voicemail during the weekend, real live people during the week, at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Our webpage has podcasts of our program going back for lots of years. Until next week.
News Radio 1400 KTEM, KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.